Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Michael's Mixdown. Michael's Mixdown is a show primarily about the recording arts, so whether you heard it in the studio or in the stadium, you can hear about it here on Michael's Mixdown. Now, today, we're going to try something a little different. I don't know much about these gentlemen that are in here with me, but we're gonna get to know each other and have a fun chat, and today's episode is to making new friends. So welcome, guys. This is Science Penguin. What do you guys call it when you get on stage and you start playing but you like forgot to turn your amp on?
Joel fucking up.
Silence Penguin.
Silence Penguin. I love it.
Oh my god.
And that's the show. I assume you guys are done already. So that's
done. Okay. It's a wrap.
No, seriously, welcome guys to the show. So we're just gonna figure this out kind of on the fly. Tell me a little bit about where you guys are from and what is it that you do as Science Penguin.
So I'm Matt. I live in Germantown, Maryland. I am the drummer of Science Penguin. I'm also a math teacher. So that pays for all of the endeavors that we go on.
So, do you mean to tell me that neither one of you guys is a science teacher or a penguin?
I am not a penguin, but I could eventually identify as one.
Okay.
I think that's the thing nowadays, right?
I'm Joel. I am from Northern Virginia, and I play guitar for Science Penguin. And I work for a medical device company. I am kind of a, like, data analyst, spreadsheet warrior type of guy.
Right. Well,
medical device, though, you found the science.
Oh, yes. What? Yeah, we did.
I mean, yeah, I guess so, but like, I don't do any of the science. That's for the smart people.
Well, we won't find any of those here, I don't think, but
one, two for sure.
One caper away from having a penguin from the zoo, so.
Yeah, well, Matt and I are combining our collective two brain cells for this call. So,
yeah.
I'm supposed to have one brain cell.
Well, it's maybe we're just sharing that one.
Right,
we're sharing it. Okay.
So I'm Michael. I'm from Central Indiana. One of the I just found out. Apparently, the place I live in is considered a suburb of Indianapolis. I was like, a suburb, like it's a little tiny and a little far away to be a suburb. It's in the metropolitan area, but evidently it's a suburb of Indianapolis now.
It's close enough, I guess.
And I am an audio engineer and a podcast host, and I've been doing podcasting and stuff for a couple of years now, 4 or 5-ish, and I run this out of a little home studio here in my house, and we kind of sort of know each other from Stop, Drop, Rewind. Is that right?
Yeah, those are pseudo internet pals of ours.
Right, right. Yeah, they live about 3 hours from me. Indiana's a long, skinny state, so I kind of live on one end of the state. They live way up by Chicago, but yeah, I've been to a couple of shows of theirs locally, and they're always a good time. And I assume that they played out somewhere that you guys got to see them, or
we went to see them on one of their tours back in April. They played in a town called Frederick, Maryland, which is like 30 minutes from us.
Yeah, that was tight.
Yeah,
those guys they were cool really shit. Good, and I knew them before then a little bit. I connected with them on Twitter kind of randomly a while back, and then we had actually talked about opening up that show for them, and it ended up not working out. But like, I was like, "Hey, Matt, let's go to a show on a Tuesday night." And we went, and they were sick.
Yeah, those guys are pretty good. Anyways, so that's kind of sort of how we came to, you know, be here where we're at is. We both kind of know those guys, and then I saw you guys on Facebook talking about you wanted to be on a show and talk about your tour and stuff, and I said, hey, I've got a show, and you could do that thing. So
yeah, here we are.
Yeah, so if you guys want to talk about the tour right away, we can do that, or we can maybe cover some ground to get. I guess how we got Science Penguin, if you want to do it in chronological order, but I'm open to whatever. This is kind of a freeform episode, so we're just going to chat and have fun.
Yeah, sure. Like, we could maybe do some chronological.
Yeah.
You know, delve into the Science Penguin lore or something.
Of which
would you even call it lore?
I don't know. I don't know what you would call it.
So at least on Spotify, I see releases back to 2018. So I'm going to guess that you guys had some build up at least to that first release there. So yeah, just take us back to, you know, how you guys met and started playing together.
So I was in college and I was originally in this band with this guy, Aaron, who he did vocals, I played drums, and when that band ended, another band like started, and Aaron was like, yeah, I got like some buddies that I want to bring on for this project, and that's the band that Joel and I were originally in. So we met back then when I was in college. We started playing music together back then, and then after that band kind of dissolved, I moved within like an hour of Joel, and he was just kind of like, yeah, let's play some music.
Well, yeah, I came over to your house for your birthday and we got shit faced.
Of course.
As we hadn't played together in like probably what, like 2 years at that point? Something like that,
yeah, at that point.
And, you know, we're like, oh my God, we should start playing music together again. Drunk as shit. And then, of course. And then a couple months later, like 6 months later or something, we kind of just started jamming, and the rest is history.
And then, what, 7 years later at this point?
Yeah, we started Science Penguin at the beginning of 2016. That's kind of when we started piecing it together.
A fine vintage.
Yeah. 2016, yeah, that's some good wine right there. Right.
It was an excellent year.
Mm-hmm. Quite right. So then you guys decided to get serious at that point, and then I guess how did you land on Life Juice in 2018?
So when we first started, we had a vocalist, and we were kind of like writing music with our vocalists, playing shows, all that jazz. And then our vocalist, she got real stressed with like her work and everything. So she, you know, made the right decision and decided she was going to focus on her career, you know, and, you know, we support her and what she does. And decided that she wasn't going to be a part of the band, and then we went instrumental. So Life Juice is actually an album of, I think, 4 or 5 songs that we wrote with the intention of having a vocalist, and then the rest of them were without, like songs we wrote intended to not have a vocalist. And what we did was we just kind of like met up with a buddy of mine who does sound engineering, and he helped us out and recorded the drums and the guitar and everything for the first like few songs that we had a vocalist for, and then we went and we recorded the rest of it ourselves. And it was kind of just, we threw together, I think it's 12 songs on Life Juice.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that was kind of our first, yeah, it was just our first like big project, big endeavor that we did to try to put some music out. I mean, we had played some shows, we had done a couple things, but we just wanted to like get some music down and be able to like put it out, but also listen to it ourselves, you know, and just be like, yeah, we wrote this. This is cool.
So. Yeah, like listen to it, not while we're playing it.
Right.
Yeah. Also, Life Juice, we did it pretty much mostly by ourselves, which is why it's
terrible.
Not great. we did a lot of that kind of learning on the fly.
I cannot pass judgment. I haven't listened to it yet, but.
Well, just remember that was just us by ourselves
and
figuring it out as we go.
I also think it's a great example as to why you need to find someone who knows what they're doing to record music for you, because we didn't know what we were doing and we tried to record it ourselves and it didn't really work great. I mean, like we got the notes recorded and all of the things are recorded, but in terms of like the audio quality, you can just kind of like tell when you listen to like the progression of our albums. If you listen to like the first one to the second to the third, you can just tell that like we've gotten better. Not like our playing has gotten better, but like the audio engineering has gotten better from one to the next to the next.
Don't worry, the playing is terrible across all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, we never got any better.
No. Right, right, right.
At least it sounds more audiophile grade.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, a lot of bands start off that way, especially self-funded, you know, indie kind of bands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the only way you're going to learn is to put out the first thing and then learn from it, and then put out the second thing and learn from it. And it sounds like you guys pretty much did that and you've stuck to it. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, I look forward to the next, I mean, Joel and I were talking about after this tour that we just went on, we're talking about like sitting down and getting to writing. So.
So you guys didn't start out with the intention of being an instrumental band, and you kind of formed into that is what I was getting, right?
Yeah, I think it would have probably happened either way. But,
you know, the weird ass shit you write.
Yeah, you know, it just happens that way. You know, we kind of went into it without any real expectations. We also couldn't find other people to play with us for a very long time. So we kind of just started doing things, and then they just kind of happened. Like, there wasn't really a plan. There wasn't really any rhyme or reason to it. we kind of just messed around until we found things that we liked. And this is just kind of how we ended up.
Right. Well, it sounds like it evolved and changed over the years, and you kind of found your groove.
It also kind of makes sense, just kind of based on all the things that we listen to and the music that we like. So,
yeah. Well, speaking of, I guess what kind of music are you guys into, and what like what's informing your playing and inspiring you? Like you can say, you know, bands or specific musicians if you like, but what are your influences, I guess?
Well, for me, it's like Chon, The Fall of Troy, Pliny, Intervals, a lot of like the instrumental nerd shit. Mm-hmm. Animals as Leaders.
Yep. I just saw them a couple of weeks ago, or a little over a month ago.
They slapped.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they're so good.
Yeah, they were doing the Dream Sonic tour with Devin Townsend and Dream Theater.
I bet that was cool as shit. And
oh man,
it was a really, really cool
show. I wanted to go to that.
Yeah, I got the feeling like it's not like I know any of those guys and could ask them or anything, but I got the feeling that tour might not happen again because it seemed to be very expensive and the turnout was okay. It wasn't like if they were selling out every show that they put out there, they mm-hmm. probably could do it right. again. But I think it was Devin that said something about like Dream Theater owns the PA rig and they're dragging that all over the country and all the lights and stuff like belong to them and they're dragging that stuff all over the place. And then of course they're having to pay, you know, three bands to go all across the country. And it's like, I couldn't imagine, you know, how this is really making a ton
right,
of money.
Right, that's crazy.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you guys are well aware, it's hard to make money as a touring musician, so.
That it is.
It's a lot of breaking even and even losing money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's rough.
Also,
and it's wild because, like, that's a really cool set of bands, too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
I mean, I grew up like in high school. Mike Portnoy was like my favorite drummer when I was in high school. I mean, Dream Theater was my jam. I listened to them so much in high school, and they were huge. And you know, it's just crazy that even a band that big with a tour that size is. I mean, like Devin Townsend and Animals, like. They all individually will sell out like the venues that they play. It's crazy that they are like running into that.
Yeah. I think that they had to get bigger venues to, you know, host a show right. that big. And then they just couldn't really sell them out and stuff everywhere they went. Cause I saw them in Cincinnati and I mean, there was a lot of people there, but I don't think it was sold out. And then I was reading stuff online like Reddit and other places. Other shows that people were saying that they went to, they were saying that they weren't sold out or anything either. So I just assumed that it was a very expensive tour. And unless they were selling out like pretty much every night and selling all their merch, like they probably weren't making a ton yeah. of money.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So anyways, Chon and Pliny and Dream Theater and what else? Oh, Animals as Leaders too.
So for me, I would say, like I said, my formative years of playing the drums, I was a big Portnoy head. I loved Mike mm-hmm. Portnoy. I mean, everything that he was incredible. But these days now, I would say my top three drummers are Matt Halpern of Periphery, mm-hmm. Matt Garska of Animals as Leaders, and Travis Orban of Darkest Hour. I just, you know, I just love the things that they do. And, you know, I listen to a lot of like, Wearing Hand of Denial, Periphery, Protest the Hero. Like I'm a metal drummer. Like I've been a metal drummer forever, but I'm not like a, right. not like a crazy blast beat death metal drummer or anything like that. Like, I've never been able to do that. And like, I have mad respect for the people that can, and it's just not me, you know? I like doing different things. So, I you know, I have a lot of respect also for like those three guys. Like I've met two of them. They're really cool dudes. And yeah, so that's been my influence, honestly. My the influence is the only word I came up with.
Right. Yeah, and I think that being a cool dude goes a long way as far as inspiring people, because you can play and be an asshole and, you know, people probably not like want to identify with you as much.
Right.
My understanding of it anyway, because I wasn't old enough to go to shows, but like in the 90s, I heard Portnoy was a pretty big jackass, but he was drunk a lot. And then by the time like I met him, like he'd been sober for, you know, a couple of decades or whatever. So he was a really, really nice dude by the time I met him.
That's awesome.
Like I saw him, and John, it was the John Petrucci solo, you know, band, whatever he's calling it, tour, where it was him and Mike and, I think it was Billy Sheehan on bass.
Oh, Liquid Tension?
No, it wasn't Liquid Tension. It was John Petrucci's like solo act or whatever.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
It was just the three of those guys, and they, John Petrucci put out an album in like 2020 or 2021, one or the other, because they did a Liquid Tension right around in there too.
Right.
But anyways, they that was the first tour that like him and Mike had been on together since like Mike had split from Dream Theater. And so that was really cool to see. And then we hung out like in the alleyway being creepers, you
of
know,
course.
Thinking that they might walk by. And John, who I'd met him before, I saw Dream Theater, and he was nice. He shook a couple of hands, signed a few things, took a couple of pictures, and he was like, I got to get on the bus. Like, I'm fucking beat. But Mike stood out there. I mean, we were in Chicago. It was probably like, you know, 25, 30 degrees outside. He stood out there until every single person got a picture with him that wanted one. And
well, that's awesome.
So he was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. Like, I mean, that's like, that's the kind of story you want to hear from, you know, those people, you know, the people that made it, the people that are like in that realm, you know, that's the kind of story you want to hear. I had a similar story actually with like when I met Tosin. Yeah. I was in London visiting a buddy, my brother. And I all the time I'll do that. I'll just be like, yeah, I was visiting a buddy. Oh, wait, it was my brother.
Yeah, it's close enough.
Yeah, right. But we were like supposed to go to a show, and then we ended up just like drinking beers in a park instead. And then we were at a pub, and then we just went afterwards, and he was like, hey, we're meeting a friend by her friend's like bus or whatever. And it's like, all right, cool. So we like went over, and it was just Animals as Leaders. And I was just like, holy shit. So I was like sitting there talking with Tosin and Javier for a while. I met Matt, and I was like talking to him for a bit, and they were just like really chill. We were just like talking about stuff. I actually ended up like finding out that he went to the middle school that I taught at for 3 years. Yeah. And his parents still live in like that area and everything. And it was really cool. And it was just like, you know, it was really nice to like be able to just chat, you know, and just hang out and just, you know, just meet these normal people who are incredible musicians and like incredibly good at what they do. So just really, it's really important, I feel like, when you're in that position, to just be a good dude, you know, like you were saying.
Right. Yeah. I think people will remember you more, or at least if you get on forums or whatever, you people won't go on there and talk about what a fucking asshole that guy is.
Well, they might still do that afterwards.
Maybe.
Yeah. He stood outside for 3 hours, but I didn't get a picture with him. So he's an asshole.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, just, I guess, if you don't mind, I'll tell you a couple of bands that I really dig. I don't play anything. I have a guitar. I'm looking at it. It sits in the corner and collects dust, but I don't play it.
No, so do mine.
Yeah. at least I put it in its little bag, slipcover bag thing, so it doesn't really get too much dust on it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really pretty much just an audio guy. But I love prog music. And I'm lucky that there's actually this weird little venue in Indianapolis that hosts a lot of prog music, a lot of prog bands. I don't know what this guy does to get, I don't know if he pays him a ton of money or whatever to show up, but sometimes he gets some really interesting acts to come by. It's called the Irving Theater. And like I've seen Tony Levin there. Him and his brother have a band called the Levin Brothers Band. And they just play like jazz, like prog fusion stuff. And they had this crazy flautist. I don't know what her name was, but she was like, you know, as much as if you know Tony Levin and what a amazing bass player he is, like she was every bit of Tony Levin, but just as a flute player.
Oh, that's oh, cool. Crazy. But
then I really like Arion and Arian Anthony Lucassen. That guy, I like a lot of Swedish, I guess, kind of musicians. And I feel like it's really unfair that a lot of the really good ones live over there and they don't live or tour much in the U.S. but like him and Avantasia are both pretty close to me. And I don't know, just like recently I've been really into the Deer Hunter. I don't know if you know them, but that guy, I want to say his name's like Casey or Colin or Casey. Yep. Yeah. He's super duper talented songwriter.
Oh yeah. I've been listening to Deer Hunter since I was in college. I love them. They're so good. Like that band is incredible. I actually saw them at the place we're going to be playing next month. And super, super good band. His music that he writes is incredible.
So he's awesome. And then like Haken is another like prog metal.
Yeah, they're
band
tight.
That I really like. But then, you know, I like a lot of kind of older prog rock stuff too. I'm a little picky, I guess, about what I like and what I don't like, but you know, like Genesis and Yes, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Really like Rush, but I don't know. And then like I've got a lot of crossover with like pop music and stuff too that I like. And so some of that older prog rock, like Genesis, when they have eras where they start to get more poppy, that's where I start to like them more. And then people are like, but you're a prog guy, you can't like the, you know, that's where people stop liking Genesis, is like in the late 80s.
Right. And,
whatever, I like. Leprous is another band I really have been enjoying the last year or two.
Hell yeah.
Got to see them. I got to see one of the weirdest shows. It was at a place in Indianapolis, kind of a mid-sized venue. I would tell you what it is, but you wouldn't know what it was. But they were there with a band called Wheel. They're kind of a smaller, like Swedish, you know, prog metal group. With Apocalyptica was like, that's who was on tour, and they brought these guys along with them. And Apocalyptica was, they were selling the tickets, and then these guys were just kind of there. And I know who Apocalyptica is, but I'm not necessarily a big fan, but I am a big fan of Leprous and Wheel. And these were two bands I never thought I'd get to see live because they're just kind of small to be touring like in the U.S. when they're not from here. That was and I think tickets were like 20 or 25 bucks. Like I love those kind of smaller shows, yeah. Which I end up seeing, you know, going and seeing some like smaller kind of indie bands because I don't want to pay $400 or $500 for nosebleeds to see Taylor Swift.
Right.
But I can pay 20 bucks sometimes and get front row seats to like bands that I actually freak out that they're here. Tomorrow, I'm going to go see King's X in Cincinnati.
Hell yeah.
So I really like Doug Pinnick and King's X stuff. And Rivers of Nihil, they're kind of closer to where you guys are from. They're from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I kind of know them. I know the name. I think I saw them once, like randomly somewhere along the way. I think they've been around a long time.
I don't know. Yeah, 2012 or 13 maybe. Was like their first album, 2013, I think. I don't know what their, you know, And that's like one of the funny things I think about, like, especially metal, is there's so many little like sub tags of sub genres of metal. And you can say that somebody like Rivers is progressive metal, but it's like, I don't know if it's death metal that they would necessarily identify with, or like, I don't think it's just doom metal, but you know, something like that. They're kind of a little bit more hardcore, kind of screamy vocal stuff. But
okay. Yeah. They are pretty cool though. I did like them.
So that's just kind of a real rough, you know, we could probably talk like all night about the different kind of stuff that we're into, but we at the very least have some common ground here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then of course Stop, Drop, Rewind. I like those guys.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, no, they were super cool.
So, your tour, what I assume was in support of Why Am I Like This, your last album?
But not really at the same time. We did the tour kind of just to do the tour, you know.
Okay.
We recorded Why Am I Like This. We started at the beginning of January of 2022. And we recorded that over 5 months or so. We recorded at a studio that's pretty local to us in Maryland. And it took a while for it to be done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just took so much time and work that touring on it afterwards was kind of an afterthought. Also, we spent so much damn money on it, like, it wouldn't have happened either way.
Did you guys like write that album in the studio, or did you have it kind of planned out before?
No, it was pretty much all written before we went in.
Okay.
We finished the last song like 3 weeks before we went in the studio. The only thing that I did in studio was like the little interlude thingy.
And the solo.
That's on there. I did that like during recording sessions, and then like at home one night after I got home from the studio, like, because it was one of the last things I think that we did when we were recording. And like, I had this whole other thing that I was gonna do, and then I didn't like it because it didn't flow the way that I wanted, and then I just ended up coming up with a whole other thing pretty much on the fly. Was all written pretty well before we actually went to the studio.
Oh yeah. Can you imagine if we tried to like show up to a studio and write?
Oh, it'd be a disaster.
Oh, it wouldn't work. It would take us like 6 years to record anything.
Yeah, no, why would we ever do that? It's not our style. We can't do that. We also did writing sessions for the bass guitar. The engineer that we worked with is a bassist as well, and he ended up just writing and tracking all the bass guitar on that album for us.
Okay, wonderful.
So we did the writing in like 6 or 7 sessions, and then we did, and then we actually like tracked them all after that.
Gotcha. So I guess like, so what was the recording process like for that? Was that your first kind of going into a studio and not necessarily doing everything yourself, or did you guys do some of this like outside of the studio on your own?
So
this whole project was in the studio, this album.
Yeah. So we did like scratch recordings ourselves just so that we could kind of have like a map of things, and then we like took those with us to the studio so that, you know, I could have guitar so I could play along to it, or like in addition to just the click track, because it would be like, for me, it's kind of tough to just like remember exactly where I am just playing to the click track, especially with like the weird time signature changes and everything. And it's like, I got to make sure that I know like where exactly I am. So the, like, we did our scratch recordings, we took those, and then we just like re-recorded the entire album essentially. So I went in three sessions and recorded all the drums, just because he didn't like edit anything in session. Just like laid down the tracks a bunch of times, and then he like worked with them later on. And then Joel came in and he like recorded all the guitars, and then they did the bass, and then they put it all together, and then that was that. Yeah.
I would like to say that like scratch recording is very smart. And if you're listening to this and you're kind of an up and coming musician, or maybe you're getting ready to do your first kind of recording, that kind of roadmap is pretty invaluable, because studio time is expensive. And if you're self-funding this, you'll find that out pretty quickly that, you know, some studios I've seen are pretty reasonable, that, you know, if you get a 4 or 5 piece band together and it ends up being like $20 or $30 an hour per band member, and that's, you know, like you can kind of swing that maybe if you have that many people, but a 2-piece band that's going in, I assume that you guys were cognizant of the fact that it would be, you know, at least kind of expensive between the two of you. So getting a roadmap and figuring that out beforehand and having some stuff to be like, this is where we want to go with this, is pretty smart.
Oh, I think it's honestly so important. Like, I think it was like, it saved us so much, like as much time, energy and money we like put into this album. I feel like even like doing the scratch recordings, like that probably saved us like half the time, because it just, I think it would have been almost impossible if I had gone in and tried to done the recording with just a click track as my only guide, you know, it wouldn't have made sense. And like, just knowing like the framework of the songs and like how they were like going to be laid down and everything, just like, you know, cause drums go first, you know, it's like, it just needed to be done that way. It just needed to be that we like did all that work ourselves, so that we had everything to walk into the studio and just be like, hey, here's everything, we're ready to go right now type thing.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we did that. And also like just being able to hand that over to the engineer and be like, this is what it sounds like, and this is the vibe that we're going for. So we don't have to kind of talk it through and explain it really, really poorly, you know. We can just be like, yeah, you know, here's this dog shit recording that we did, but you kind of get the gist of what we're doing. It takes, you know, some of the guesswork out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not fiddling around so much trying to figure out what it is you're going for.
It ended up being really invaluable for us, and I'm really glad that we did it, even though it kind of sucked to record it twice, essentially, but it really was worthwhile in the long run.
Well, and you probably would have recorded it twice or three, or, you know, you probably would have had a lot more takes, I guess, on the studio's
time. Oh, yeah, I had hundreds of takes across the time that I was in the studio as it was, so.
I almost see it as a necessity.
Yeah.
You know, I don't foresee us going into a studio without doing that again.
Mm-mm. Not a chance.
Mm-mm. All right, and this is, as a show, is very much, you know, kind of the background of how things get put together in different audio contexts. So I don't know if, you know, didn't mean to throw you off course or anything by getting really philosophical about like the business of making music, but a lot of people I think need to hear that kind of thing, especially if they're trying to do this for a living, or they are dreaming about doing it for a living. It's important for them to hear that, you know, because you can be a great player and you could write maybe really great lyrics, but there's a lot more to making music as a career, or at least trying to do it so that you make enough money that you keep doing it, than just, you know, being a good player or writing good music. So
yeah, totally. And like, we didn't know any of those things going into it. Like, we kind of learned all of this on the fly.
Yeah, and that's probably how it is for a lot of folks, that you just kind of have to you know what you want to do, and you have to go out and figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, whether it's, you know, you want to start a podcast, or you want to be a Twitch streamer, or you want to record music, you just go out and you start figuring it out. And you have that first album that is a jumping off point that you can see yourself getting better every album and that kind of thing. But if you don't make the first one, then you can't make the second one and the third one, and, you know.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure. I would say to anybody that's just starting out, it's super important, if you're like going to do studio time, especially if like the music that you're writing is, you know, hard to like keep it straight as to like where you are in certain parts, or like how many times you do certain things or things like that. Like, just put in the work beforehand. Make sure that you know what you're doing at all points. And, you know, I can't emphasize how helpful it was just to be able to like have the scratch guitars when I was doing like the actual recording for this last album. Like, it just made a world of difference for me. So,
well, it sounds like you learned a valuable lesson.
I did. I did, for sure. Yeah.
So, and then you guys, fast forward a little bit, then you guys went on a fairly sizable tour. And if you want to get into the, you know, the business of how touring works, we can, but, just feel free to, you just tell me how that tour went, and you can elaborate that on any way that you'd like.
Yeah. So we were going to tour back in 2020, and
nope.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, right.
I'd been working on putting together like this 10-day run, and I was mostly done. And then we're going to do like another thing later on in the summer also. And obviously none of that ever happened. And then we didn't play for a long time. We didn't really start playing out again until after we put out the most recent album. Like, we put that out, and then we kind of, at that point, we were getting back into playing shows more regularly. So, and like, we just did local stuff here and there, two or three shows a month maybe. And then, you know, we started talking about like, hey, you know, what do we want to do? Like, we've been wanting to go on tour for a long time. And then I don't know how or why that idea of a month-long tour came into place, but we ended up just being like, okay, fuck it. Like, let's see what happens, you know? Maybe it works, maybe it won't. We've never really done this before, so we'd be learning on the fly. And then it all just kind of ended up working out. Like, I did all the booking for the shows, and it was a pretty monumental project. I started working on putting shows together literally January 2nd. And like, even at the end of the year before, like, we kind of talked through what we wanted to try and do, where we would want to play. Like, we kind of had like a framework of what type of route we wanted to do, long before we ever even started trying to book the shows, which was also very helpful. You know, it kind of helped stay organized and just made it easier to kind of piece it together one stop at a time. But whew, I fully understand why people pay money for that service too.
Right.
It was tough. And you know, a band like ours, you know, we're not playing big venues. We're playing the local dive bars and stuff. So that probably helped a little bit, but yeah, it's tough, man. Like, it is a real commitment to put something that size together.
Right.
And like, maybe we shouldn't have done that. That's kind of you know, going against the grain of what a lot of people do, but we kind of just went for it to see what would happen, and it all just kind of fell together.
Well, I mean, it sounds like just like the, you know, recording in the studio, you guys knew what you wanted to do and you set out to do it. So
yeah, we did, but I also had a lot of fun doing it, like
I was gonna say honestly, like, you know, Joel did a metric fuck ton of work just to like put this whole thing together, and like once we got into it and once we started doing the thing, it was like, it was incredible. You know, we got to meet really, really cool people, see a lot of really, really cool bands, and go to some really cool places I'd never been, like drive across the country in a van and just like play music thousands of miles away from home for people that have never heard of us. And, you know, it was like one of the coolest experiences just because we were able to like do that. And it was incredible that we were able to do that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, how many like states did you guys end up getting to?
I don't know. It was a lot. Like we did 25 shows in 30 days.
Which is a really tight schedule for two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was also maybe a little bit of a mistake because we had literally no wiggle room at all. Like,
yeah, like one van breakdown.
Right. Like any mishap along the way would have significantly derailed the remainder of the tour, if not completely, you know. So we were very fortunate that we ended up not really having any issues like that. Because anything happening would have been a disaster.
So I just, sorry, I had a goofy question come to mind, but like, I assume that, you know, you set off probably with like a handful of like, you know, the stuff you're going to need to play music with, like drumsticks, drum heads, strings. But like, say you break like a bunch of strings, do you just bring a bunch with you, or do you like plan out a couple of places where there's going to be like a big music store, like a big Sam Ash or Guitar Center or something that you can stop at?
I just brought a couple of packs with me. Funny enough, I broke one string the whole tour. Okay. And it was at the end of our very last song of the tour at our last show.
Oh,
it was like the last minute and a half of the song, if that. And that's when it happened.
And for me, I brought, like I put new heads on my drums, because I brought my entire kit. I put new heads on my drums at the start of the tour, and then I brought one extra pair of heads that I actually didn't use the whole time. Like my drums just like kind of maintained their tune and everything, and I would touch them up every once in a while. But the like I also bought like 11 pairs of sticks before the tour started, and I didn't break a stick until like more than halfway through the tour. Then I broke four in one show. But then I was like, all right, cool, whatever. I brought a bunch, so whatever. So I started using like the new ones, and like, yeah, it was totally all that shit like held together and held strong. It was great.
Yeah, it was kind of nice, actually. Like, we over-prepared a little bit as far as that goes, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen, right? Like,
right.
So I'm glad that I didn't end up needing it, but I'm glad that I brought it with me in case I need it. I also restrung a couple of times just while we were out.
Oh, I did have to buy a cymbal at one point.
Oh, yeah, because you thrashed that one.
Yeah, that one, I mean, that one was kind of, it already had a crack when we started the tour, and I was like, I'm going to need to replace this thing. So we just found a Guitar Center. I mean, they're everywhere. Like, we were going to, like, cities, so, like, it wasn't too bad to find, like, a Guitar Center on our way out of a place when we only had, like, a three-hour drive or something like that. And we just swung by one. I found the exact cymbal I was looking for, and I just got another one, and we just kept going, so... The nice thing about doing a U.S. tour, or honestly, like most places, is there's music shops all over the place. So half the time you can just, if you ever need something small, you can just pop into any local music shop and just be like, hey, I just need like you know, this drum head, I just put a hole in my snare drum head or something like that, you know, and then just, you can just replace it, no problem. As long as you have time.
Right. Give yourself time.
Right. Try not to do that an hour before the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys had seen it, but one of my favorite like TikTok videos ever was one of Chris's from Stop Drop Rewind, because Andy, their drummer, like forgot a snare drum, like just wholesale forgot his snare drum, like the rest of the kit, and then he was like,
"Where's
my snare drum?" Oh no!
So he like improvised a snare drum out of one of his smaller toms.
Oh, and the one in the recording studio.
No, they're getting ready to play in front of people. Jesus. Like it's at a show. And he's got a bunch of I don't know where they were playing, but I think he went up, you know, and got like a bunch of coffee stirrers or something from like behind the bar and like taped them to the bottom of a snare, and I don't remember all what else. I think he ended up putting what the hell would that be called? Like a ching ring from like one of his, you know, cymbal setups on the bottom of it.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
But he made like an improvised snare, and like nobody really called him out for it.
That's nuts. That's insane. But that's some MacGyver ass shit. Yeah. Like that's fucking wild.
Right. Oh my God. Try not to do that. But yeah.
That's hilarious. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Right. Well, drums and especially drum cases are fucking huge and heavy. So it's hard to fit too many of them in like a van or in a truck.
Yeah. But don't we know it? I mean, I took my entire set in cases, and that took up like the majority of the van. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also do some live sound engineering, mostly just for the one band, some friends of mine. I'm the youngest guy in the group by a little bit. So I usually end up being the one that gets to help unload the drum cases and stuff, which is always fun.
Yeah. Super fun.
Super duper.
Yeah, drum cases are a bitch. Drums in general, moving them are a bitch.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it keeps you in shape, I guess.
Something like that.
I can't remember the movie. It was like, well, if you want to do, it's a song. If you want to be, you got to be tough if you're going to be dumb. And you got to be strong if you're going to be a drummer.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
Do you even lift, bro?
There's actually a story. This dude that I used to be in a band with back in college, he told me about how his drummer had like a hardware bag. It wasn't even a case. It was just a bag. And he just said all the time, he was like, he would just like pick it up, like carry it into a venue. And someone else would try to pick it up. It was like crazy heavy. And they'd be like, how the fuck do you just move this? Like it's nothing. And you'd be like, you just got to lift the heavy out of it.
Yeah, what are you stupid?
Yeah, come on, like come on. I feel like I have this hardware case that I bought that was it's actually like a mic stand case, and I got it so that I could fit all of my hardware. I have a rack, so I could like fit my rack and everything in it. I just put all of my hardware in it, no problem. And I went to pick it up, and I was like, God damn, this thing's like 200 pounds or some shit. Like, it's fucking crazy heavy. But by the end of the tour, I was just fucking like, you know what? It's fine. I would just like pick it up and like move it over some stairs, pick it up and like, you know, move it out of the way of things. It's just like, you just lift the heavy out of it, you know? That's just what I kept telling myself. Just lift the heavy out of this case. It'll be fine.
Yeah. And it worked.
It did.
It worked. And now you're ripped.
No, I wish.
Bad news, didn't work that well.
Did not work that well. The beer didn't help.
Well, no, never does.
Ain't that the truth?
There's a lot of beer in touring.
Yeah.
Honestly, less than you'd think with the timeline we had, way less than you'd think.
Well, yeah, for us, because we gave ourselves no time to do anything at all, the whole time. Yeah, when I say it was a tight schedule, like, it was tight. There was there was no...
What I'm hearing is the next tour will be maybe...
Maybe a little... between. Yeah, maybe a little bit closer together.
Or closer together.
Closer together less time in general, more time in between if need be, you know. We've learned learned a thing or two.
Yeah. And like, so we started in the Northeast, right? Our first show was in Brooklyn, New York. And we did four shows in like that Northeast area, like New England. And that was nice because everything's close together. You know, at most we did like, it's like 5.5 hours to Brooklyn, right? But like after that, you know, we're going like 3 hours, an hour, 30 minutes. Like we had pretty light travel time starting out, which was nice. And I definitely highly recommend like keeping your shows, you know, 4 or 5 hours or less apart, or, you know, even closer than that, because it definitely kind of sucks to drive like 8 hours and then go play a show, unload all your shit, set it up, play, break it down, pack it up, drive somewhere else. Like it definitely, definitely wears on you.
Right. Cause like 90% of touring is driving and loading and unloading.
Yeah. You know, we're driving like 700 miles to go play 30 minutes of music, you know?
Yeah.
Good old hurry up and wait.
Yeah. But, honestly, for the most part, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, right? Like for all the traveling and all of the lugging of gear and everything like that. Like I thought it would be worse. Like the hardest days were the days off in a way. It's like everything kind of catches up with you. Yeah. Then that's when you kind of realize like, oh shit, like I'm exhausted. Because some of our days off, like some of them were travel days, and then some of them were we just were like chilling out for a bit. So when we had some downtime, then it's just like then it hits you like a ton of bricks. It's like, oh shit, like
yeah, you kind of lose that momentum.
Like, oh, that's what that feels like. Yeah, it's definitely a momentum thing because like we're rushing from one place to the next to the next to the next.
And then we get a minute to sit down and we're like, oh, I'm exhausted. What do you know?
Like, oh my God, how did that happen? Because the rest of the time, we didn't have enough time to.
I just remembered I'm in my 30s.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and the rest of the time, we didn't have time to remember that we were tired. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what tired feels like. Me wanting to go to sleep.
You remember real quick.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Can I sleep for 12 hours right now?
But also, like, some of those first couple of days of the tour, like, we could sleep in. We didn't have to rush. We had time to, like, chill out, take our time to get to our venues, set up. And, like, that's really valuable. Just for your own, like, physical well-being and mental well-being, like,
yeah,
you know, not having to rush through everything, just having some time to not do anything is really nice. So when you get the chance to do that while you're traveling, like, definitely do that.
Yeah, it definitely made a world of difference.
So on the next tour, there's going to be a little bit more downtime, it sounds like.
Yeah, like this was an aggressive endeavor. So I think next time we go for it, we won't go as long and we probably won't go as far. It might be a little while before we go on another national tour kind of deal. And like, it was super cool. I'm so glad that we did it, but it's also not realistic for us to do that over and over again. So, you know, we'll figure out what is manageable for us. And the good thing about like, where we're at in like the mid-Atlantic is like we don't really have to go very far, right? And that's what's nice about the East Coast is like everything's pretty close together. Like you can go from one major city to the next and they're 2 or 3 hours apart, if that. So for touring, like that's pretty ideal, you know, hopping from one city to the next and not having heavy travel time. So you can cover a lot of stops in less ground. So I don't know. We haven't really talked at all about touring next because we're still recovering from the first one. But
right.
You know, something like that, or more concentrated, right? Like the Northeast, the Southeast, maybe the Midwest, or do like a Texas tour or like a California tour, like, and kind of just concentrating
thing in Texas.
Right. Like we did two shows in Texas and they were very far apart from each other. And Texas has a lot of great music in it, but we didn't have the number of days to work with to really, really hit Texas in a, in the way that I would have liked to.
Right. But I mean, it's so damn big too, that like some of the major cities are, you know,
right, they're like 6 or 8 hours apart,
6 hours apart. And, and you're still in Texas.
Like, yeah.
Like you can't really, I mean, unless you start in the very like top, you know, one corner of Indiana and go to like to the bottom corner, like you can't go for 8 hours and still be in Indiana.
Not like Texas.
Not like Texas.
Nah. Let's drive 12 hours and be in the same state.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think that's probably something we would look into doing, is like, maybe we can fly out to Texas and do a week's worth of shows and then kind of cover ground there more in depth the way that we would have liked to, right, but weren't able to do on this tour.
Well, like in the Midwest, though, you know, we've got, just like to look at Ohio. Ohio has so many big cities that are about 2 to 3 hours apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could... I could see where it would be like more feasible to do like driving around in, you know, the Midwest, like, because just like in Ohio alone, there's, you know, 4 or 5 really pretty good sized cities that are all within about 2 hours of each other, because it's not a humongous state.
Right.
And then you can, if you're in the right corner of Ohio, then you can like just run right into Kentucky, and then you can go to like Louisville and some other big cities down there too.
Yeah.
Everybody always skips over Indiana though, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
They're always big. All the tours that like I'm interested in going to, they're either in Cincinnati
or Chicago.
Chicago. Sometimes they go to Louisville. But like almost always they skip over Indianapolis for some reason.
Yeah. So I looked at Indianapolis, but, I was kind of doing some juggling of dates and then, it ended up not working out, but we actually stayed in Indiana on one of our days off.
Yeah. It's an okay place to stay, like for an hour,
yeah,
but you don't want to like live here.
But we played like Cincinnati. Cincinnati was cool. It wasn't one of our best shows, but you know, it's cool to just be able to play in Cincinnati when we did, like,
right,
you know, we've never done that before. Who knows when we will again, but we had a cool show and a cool venue in Cincinnati, and we did Louisville as well. So we kind of went all around Indiana. Spent a lot of time driving through Indiana.
Well, yeah, it's called the Crossroads of America because people drive through it, but they don't stop
here. Yeah.
Now Indiana's, you know, it's fine. There's just not a lot of big cities for like things to do, and the ones that are really far apart. So
yeah, there's really, and you've got limited options for sure.
Right. So it's like, if you're not in Indianapolis, then you're usually close enough to another bigger city that you wouldn't do that thing in Indiana. You'd go ahead and go to Louisville or Cincinnati or, mm-hmm, or Chicago or something like that.
Yeah. So
it's like, I get it, but
also kind of lame to be like passed over all the time.
Right. But I mean, pretty much everybody that's, you know, in the same vein as like somebody like me, they all are like, yeah, it kind of sucks to be here, but it's fun.
Yeah.
you can, you know, it's because nobody wants to be here that, that like you can afford a house, but at the same time,
but at the same time, there's a reason you can afford the house.
Right.
But yeah, like for the most part, it's pretty quiet though here, like especially like I only live 30 minutes from Indy, so it's pretty quiet here. Mm-hmm. Doesn't like suck to be here. There's just nothing really to do unless you make it happen. So
right.
Sometimes it's not a bad thing. I don't know. I know that there's a lot of people that love living in a city And there's a lot of people that are like, you know what? I'm cool with not being around a lot of people. So it's right. kind of just, for me, I guess it just depends on what you want, you know?
Right. I don't really know anything about Germantown, but would you consider that like a pretty big place? I think I did a quick Google on it just because I was like, where the hell is that?
It's actually a suburb of DC. So right. It's not like there's a lot happening in Germantown necessarily, but we're close enough to, I mean, it's probably like without traffic, 30 minutes to get to DC, an hour to get to Baltimore. Like there's stuff around that's kind of close that you could get to if you wanted to be around people. And that's kind of like, that's where I'm at, where I'm just kind of like, yeah, I don't really want to be around people all the time, but if I want to be around people, then I can get to where people are. And that's
right.
That's what I'm for.
So I guess give me a favorite memory of this tour, like something funny or something unexpected, or maybe you met somebody interesting that really made it like worth the 6-hour drive to get there. Or did everybody suck everywhere you?
No, went? Everybody was really the problem is that everybody was really cool. Everywhere yeah. I went. So it's hard to pick out like one that was really like that stood out. Like everybody was so fucking cool the whole tour.
Yeah. And like people were so nice to us. It was kind of almost unsettling, right? Because we're like this little small time nobody band from Maryland that has the audacity to try and do a nationwide tour, right? But like people were so nice to us. It was almost weird. And like, you know, people let us crash at their houses. People fed us like all kinds of stuff. So like that was just really cool to like put so much time and work into putting this tour together and then like do better than we expected we would. And also just be really welcomed in a lot of places. Play with really cool bands that are all really good at what they do. And just kind of make a lot of connections and just have fun with people who like to do the same thing that we do.
Yeah, like it was just so wild to be able to go out and go across the country and just meet all of these people who are just like, hey, you know what? You're doing these things and it's really cool that you're doing these things and we understand how hard it is for you to do these things and we support you and... You know, come crash on my couch and or like, you know, just come chat with me for a bit. And do you need anything? Like you just want to like there was a dude who he like gave us hangers for like our merch and like snacks and stuff. Oh, yeah. And like it was just like super cool that there were people that were just that like they just know, you know, they just understand the life and they just understand like. What it is that we're doing and trying to do. And they're just like, everyone's just so welcoming and supportive that it's just, it's amazing. Like the industry is just amazing.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons that I know anything, I guess, about like the business of touring is because I end up talking to people at shows like that get it. And so those, I think, are always make for fun conversations when somebody not only enjoys what you do, but understands, like, what goes into it and how much work you're having to put in and what, you know, you might be going through to make that show happen and stuff. So, I mean, it sounds like you guys ran into a lot of fine folks out there, and that's always good to hear.
Yeah, we really did. And, you know, that's kind of nice, you know, for... DIY touring, like everything can be just a total crapshoot. right? Like, you could find a band to play with, or they end up being like total dicks. And then like might just like ruin a show for you or something. But like, that never really happened to us. Just from beginning to end of the tour, like, we really had so much good fortune along the way, you know, because you hear different stuff all the time for DIY touring. Like, things just go wrong at any given point, and we kind of just breezed through it. So we're either incredibly good at it or incredibly lucky. And it's maybe a little bit of both. I don't know. Right. But well, for one reason or another, like, it all
you guys
just
learned a lot. Yeah. So the next one will be,
and
hopefully even smoother.
One reason or another, it all just worked out for us. So, you know, that's kind of nice. I feel like that doesn't always happen.
I feel like most times it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And we were
yeah.
just incredibly fortunate that it did this time around, you know?
Yeah, I mean, don't worry. Next tour, every single thing will go wrong. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, we were, like, we brought camping gear and everything, and we were fully, like, prepared to have to, like, camp out. And honestly, the entire time we were out, we didn't, like, people were just so welcoming and so, like, good to us and helpful that they just, they put us up everywhere we needed a place to stay, like, It was crazy and incredible, and just like, I'm just so thankful that there are so many people in the industry that are willing to open up their homes and let us like crash there, and like so accepting and so supportive and everything. So it was just amazing.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, it seems like, especially when you're working with nerdier people, like people that are into prog stuff, I don't know, it seems like the vibe is just different with those kind of folks.
It definitely can like, be,
I don't know how, I don't know why, I guess, but it just seems like most of the people like I've ever been to prog shows with are just so nice.
Yeah.
And I've heard, you know, stories of people that go to like other kinds of metal shows and like people are like, I don't give a shit what you think. I'm filming this whole show and I don't care if it's blocking your view. Like, I'm here for what I want. And like most of the prog shows I've been to, everybody's just so nice. And they like, you can just strike up a conversation with anybody about what kind of bands they like. And, you know, so I think that might have at least a little bit to do with it. But like going back to, you know, not being an asshole,
right.
Like it, as long as you guys aren't assholes, then people are probably going to be more receptive to when you need something and that kind of thing. So, sounds like you guys met a lot of cool folks and had a lot of fun on this tour, which is hopefully at least is the goal. And if you keep chasing that goal, then maybe the money will follow. But it sounds like you guys at least had a very successful, like fulfilling tour anyway.
Yeah. I think, you know, all things considered, everything went as well as it possibly could have.
Yeah, 100%.
And if things fall apart on the next tour, then hopefully you guys learn some things. And you'll be ready to handle that kind of thing.
Right. The band breakdown or go forage in the forest.
Right. Oh, we definitely learned a lot of things from this tour.
Yeah.
That's 100%.
Yeah,
this was an amazing tour, and there were definitely some things that like could have gone better, could have gone worse, and we learned a lot from it. Ways to like improve, ways to mitigate some of the issues that could have arrived and did arise, like all of that. Yeah, it was incredible.
So what's next for Science Penguin besides a long rest and, you know, hopefully you get all your hit points back and refill all your spell slots, and then you're ready to go for the next thing. But after that,
okay, D&D, let's go. All right, spell Sorry, slot.
I have been playing Baldur's Gate like
hell yeah,
4 or 5 hours a night every night for
that's amazing.
Out, so
as you should.
And actually, my last episode before this, I was talking to one of the voice actresses from Baldur's Gate. So that was a real treat for me to be able to connect with her.
Oh, that's cool as fuck.
But anyways, but not because if I start talking about BG3, we'll be here all night. But so what's next for Science Penguin beyond recuperation, do you think?
Yeah, I think we're probably just going to get back into writing.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've really written anything. And, we're pretty focused on doing like live shows, right? We play out pretty regularly. But I think after like October, I think we're just going to hunker down and like just grind out some writing, kind of relearn how to write again.
Relearn how to music again.
Yeah, because we've really been playing like the same songs for quite some time. Like,
right.
Not just the tour, like for everything else that we've been doing too. It's kind of almost always the same thing or pretty similar. So I want to write new music. I want to try some new things that we've never done before, and then just kind of see what happens. But we really haven't talked a lot about what we're going to do next. You know, we've kind of just been taking some breaks. We played a couple of shows like right after we got home. And then after those were done, like we haven't done anything. Like we haven't even practiced since we've been home. But we've got a couple of local shows coming up in October. And then after that, probably not going to do any more shows for a while. But we are going to play a pretty big show in October, which hasn't really officially been announced yet for us being a part of it, but I'm hoping we'll be able to do that coming up soon. But that's kind of cool because we just got asked to do that like a week or so ago, and I wasn't going to add anything more to the calendar, but that one was too good to pass up. So
too good to pass up, yeah.
We're going to do another one and then call it a day for a while.
And then maybe we'll get some new music from you next year sometime.
It might take longer than that. Yeah, we'll see. But the last one took a lot longer than I thought it would to write. Yeah. I'm not
terribly surprised that it took that long. Not terribly,
but yeah, it was hard, and then I had writer's block for a long time, and it all just kind of fell into place.
Right. And you may, like a lot of artists are doing, like just throw a single out there that may or may not be connected to like an album at a later point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's how a lot of artists are kind of doing it these days, is just trying to get smaller releases more frequently instead of, you know, taking
big releases every 5 years.
Yeah. Which I don't know if that keeps them relevant or it works for them or whatever, but I see it a lot. So,
and like new people starting out too. I mean, like there's a lot of new people who will just put out like one song.
Right. Yeah.
And if it's a banger, like people notice.
Right. Yeah. And then that might get you like just enough dough or whatever off of, you know, streaming and stuff to maybe think about putting together an album or something. But
right.
I don't know. Do people still sell songs on like Bandcamp and iTunes, or is it all just streaming these days if they do a single?
I mean, yeah, definitely on Bandcamp. Okay. I don't know about iTunes. I assume so, but I think it's not like it used to be.
Right. Yeah, especially with the addition of Spotify, and they pay people like a one-billionth of a penny or whatever for every stream you get. And
yeah,
they're so generous.
Yeah,
very.
Well, and like all I ever hear is like Spotify is losing money. Like if I ever see Spotify pop up in the news, they're talking about like they're losing money, and I'm like, they only pay people like a billionth of a penny or whatever.
Like, yeah, right.
How the hell are they losing money? But, well, was there any thing else that you guys wanted to cover, or any other? Maybe you just want to pitch your where people can find you and where people can listen to your music, or?
Yeah, I mean, we've covered quite a bit of ground, so. But you can find us on pretty much any streaming platform. Social media is Science Penguin MD, pretty much across the board. So if you happen to stumble,
wherever you listen to music, it is there. Just
yeah, pretty
search
much
for Science Penguin and you will find it.
And you will find it. So if you stumble across us on the internet somewhere, like, you don't have to go far. We try and make it as easy for you to find as we can.
Right. Well,
we were for a while competing with a, what was it, like a teaching service, Science Penguin or something like that?
Yeah, like we probably still are.
Yeah.
I think they're still bigger than us.
Yeah. But
so, I don't know what it is. It's like something for like teachers. Like reading to like kids or some shit. I don't know exactly, but it would. That was the number one Google search, and I think it's still bigger than us.
Penguins reading to kids about science.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like,
I mean, that's hard to beat.
Yeah, right. But and theirs is the Science Penguin.
Right.
Ours
right.
is just Science Penguin.
Yeah. So like, just if I Google it right now, I see the Science Penguin, but then off to the side, like literally to the right of it, not below it, there's you guys, musical artist, and listen to on YouTube, Spotify, Pandora also.
Yeah.
So we're getting there.
So yeah,
we're getting there.
You're at the top, you're just to the right and they're to
right,
the left.
Right.
So
yeah, no, I think we're a couple of Google results down still, but.
So it probably would help if you typed in Science Penguin Band. Yeah, that brings up your Bandcamp. So
perfect. There we go.
And your Facebook is right there too. So, and then there's a YouTube channel. I don't know if that's you guys or not, but
the YouTube channel is us. There's also a Science Penguin, the Science Penguin, like the teaching one that it has a YouTube channel, but we have one. There's not an inordinate amount of stuff up on our YouTube channel, but there is some like live performance stuff, which is cool.
Okay.
We've gotten a lot of that, like a fair bit of that from the tour and from like other places and stuff that we've been able to throw up there. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, I expect you guys to stop in Indiana the next time you're out on tour.
Oh, for sure.
But,
yeah,
but if you're in Cincinnati or Louisville or something, I'll understand. But yeah, let me know, and I would try to make it to a show if it was one of those. Chicago's hell a little harder to get to for me. It's like four and a half hour drive, depending on where you're going.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you showed up in Chicago next time we play there, I would just be like, why are you here?
Right.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Why did you do that?
Why did you come here?
Anyways, if you guys happen to swing somewhere, you know, close like Cincy again, let me know.
Oh, and, hell yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
For coming on the show and making new friends. Or you guys
yeah,
make a new friend, I guess, unless you count my dog.
Of course.
Oh, I definitely yeah.
oh,
count
definitely
your dogs. Are you kidding me? I'm honestly like sad I didn't get to hear them this entire time. But
yeah,
I mean,
they've been surprisingly quiet, but Ryder has run to the back door to throw a hissy fit at something a couple of times. But
he, as dogs do, of course.
I closed the one door to the studio so that he has to go all the way around to go to the back door if he wants to huff and puff. So you got to be smart when you're recording. You got a little home studio and you've got animals. So
of course, yeah, of course.
Well, guys, thanks for coming on doing the show, really, and you know, and we will put this up, and you can put it all on your social media, and people can listen to us talk for an hour and a half, and they will probably definitely want to do that, right? So,
oh yeah,
yeah, totally.
But yeah, thanks for coming on, guys. And if you liked this episode of Michael's Mixdown, you can certainly feel free to listen to more of Michael's Mixdown. It's also pretty much anywhere that you might find your other podcasts at. And I'm really at this point, I'm just down to Facebook, a little bit of Instagram, and TikTok for Michael's Mixdown. So if you, I think I'm m.mixdown on TikTok because it, when I signed up for that account, it didn't like Michael's Mixdown for whatever, for a username. So, but yeah, you can find me there. And you'll get links to new episodes and some of my goofy humor. And you may get a picture of a dog once in a while if you're lucky. If every episode gets 100 listens, I'll put up a picture of a dog.
Perfect.
But this episode has to get 100 listens or no dogs.
Well, then everyone needs to listen to this shit because I want to see dogs.
Right?
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so I'm going to need you to get on it.
Right?
Let's go.
If I don't get pictures of dogs, I'm going to shit.